It takes something for us to model for other people, but that's truly what people need to see, right? So you can tell them all day long, have work-life balance, have work-life balance. I've had people come to me and go, I'm so sick of my boss telling me I needed more work-life balance when I don't even know what that looks like. So when you show them what it could look like, I'm not checking email from the time I get home until tomorrow morning, because that is my hard line in the sand that I'm going to be with my kids. Again, gives permission to people to actually be able to do the same thing and create those boundaries so they come back refreshed.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome to the first official episode of the newly branded Culture Coach Podcast. I am your host, Wendy Brand. In case you didn't know it, June is National Employee Wellness Month. So if May was Mental Health Awareness Month, June is about ensuring that we are taking a holistic approach to our wellness, employees in particular. And this episode shares some statistics around mental well-being in the workplace and a conversation with a leader in the mental well-being and resilience space. Don't worry. I'm going to have episodes that will provide you tactical roadmaps to building out your culture, offering you a blueprint to build the culture you envision. And even though we're talking about well-being, the conversation with my guest offers some real, tangible solutions for creating a culture that offers and cultivates an environment for your employees to feel safe about having conversations about their well-being. And if you think it's not a conversation you should be having at work, think again. In 2022, the World Health Organization released a report highlighting the workplace as a key example of a setting where transformative action on mental health is truly needed. This might include measures to alleviate mental and emotional stress from a variety of issues, ranging from burnout to bullying to boredom. As we move into the next evolution of the workforce, employers have the opportunity to be even more people-centric, really to understand the importance of being people-centric. And having managers who are trained to model positive behaviors, have conversations around health, create an environment of psychological safety, and effectively refer employees to resources can be the difference between an effective and an ineffective strategy. And it can also be a factor in helping you retain some of the exodus of the top talent. So, in our efforts to build a profitable organization, we have to remember that our greatest resource is our people. And if they are struggling with their mental health and overall well-being, they are not the most productive employee. So whether you're a leader that instinctively understands the value of leading with a people-first mindset, or you need me to translate that into productive man hours. Either way, if we treat our people right, it's a win-win. There is no downside. So today, I'm excited to introduce you to my guest, Michelle E. Dickinson. Michelle is a renowned figure in mental health innovation, known globally as a keynote speaker, workplace resilience trainer, TED speaker, and best-selling author. With over 4,000 hours dedicated to training and coaching educators, Michelle's expertise catalyzes profound shifts in emotional well-being, emphasizing self-reliance and personal mastery. I am so excited to share this episode with you. Enjoy. All right, Michelle Dickinson, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you.
Oh, it's so great to be here. Thanks for finding me. It's a privilege.
Awesome. Well, we are talking about resilience, mental well-being, and the workplace. And I'm curious how you found yourself doing this work.
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. I never thought I would be doing this. I thought I would retire from a corporate job, but life unfolds as it may, and it's always perfect. So I was working in a corporate job and was invited to give a TED talk about growing up with a mom who was bipolar. And that really was a pivotal point in my career. Little did I know. So I told the story about my mom, really opened the conversation about mental health in the workplace. I was working at the time for Johnson & Johnson, and then became a very passionate mental health advocate with their mental health employee resource group. Went on to write a memoir about my mother, just based on the feedback I got from the TED Talk, and started to just be an outspoken advocate inside and outside of the company, was giving talks, was really just helping to humanize mental health. And then, you know, life happens. I was going through a divorce. I was diagnosed with depression myself for the first time, had to figure that out. And my position was eliminated at my company. So within 1 week, I lost my marriage and my job. And so I had to figure out, what am I going to do? And decided I needed to do more of this work that filled my soul, which was really get out there and make a bigger difference for humanity. So I decided that I wanted to at first become an advocate, but then I always wondered, you know, why are we not talking about this before we hit burnout? Why are we not talking about the preservation of our emotional well-being? Like, we all have the ability to do something about it instead of just waiting to hit rock bottom. So based on what I learned in my own clinical therapy with my therapist, the strategies that I adopted when I was going through depression, combined with all the deep work that I did with Tony Robbins and Landmark, I decided I'm going to really help people build their resilience, boost their resilience, become aware of where they have agency, and teach that. So the rest is history. Started my own practice right before the pandemic, and have been helping people ever since.
What an inspiring story. And I love that you have used your own experience, which a lot of people that find themselves in those, you know, with a platform are pulling from their own personal experiences. So how great that now others can benefit from what you went through from your childhood and even your own experiences later in life. So I'm curious because, I have a corporate background and spent 25 years in the corporate world, and it was a taboo topic. Now, having gone through the pandemic, thankfully, it's allowed us to really find our voices and start speaking up more. What did you find when you were, when you were at Johnson & Johnson in those early days that you were able to implement and execute there versus then you mentioned going through your own therapy process and learning along the way there? And is there a difference now in what you would recommend to organizations versus what you did at Johnson & Johnson?
I think we need more leaders to go first.
Okay.
I think there's only so much the individual employee can do at their level. But there's a big shift that can happen when a senior leader is courageous enough to tell their story. Because, you know, we have these leaders in big organizations that appear to have it all together. But there's a human side that emerges, and almost a silent permission to be human yourself when you hear your leader admit, "I struggled with severe anxiety. I struggled with depression. I had a loved one who was diagnosed with schizophrenia," like whatever it is, like those are the models that really do help us feel like it's okay to be human and talk about it. And, you know, I think that's the biggest piece that I think was missing initially. We had few leaders that were open and honest, but the more I've witnessed this over the years, the more I see an impact on culture.
Yes. When I was at a large tech organization, we had a C-suite level leader that had a daughter that was autistic, and we had an ERG formed, an employee resource group formed for you know, for parents. And he kind of became the spokesperson there because of his own experience. And you're right. It just, I think it made people feel more comfortable. Like, okay, wow. You know, yeah. If he's able to come forward and share his experiences, I too can come forward and learn from others. And so from a leadership perspective, from those leaders at the top, how can we help them have more of a voice? Like, what can they do in their role to help support allow or create a space where people feel comfortable speaking about these things?
Yeah, I think, you know, creating environments, you know, that lend itself to discussion, you know, there's a couple of things, like I would say, like, even being aware of where the barriers and care are in your own organization, right? It's one thing for someone to finally have the courage to reach out and get support. But if there's like this barrier that prevents them, leaders can change that if they're aware of it and creating that funnel of communication back to them to be able to do something about it. You know, having open discussions, even in like meetings about life, about challenges, you know, and going first and, you know, even just highlighting what you do for well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people don't realize those leaders that look untouchable or those leaders that look like they have it all together, many of them have solid routines. Many of them have like their golden thing that they have to do that gives them the balance they need to show up at work. It doesn't just happen. Like, there's effort. Like, you know, I remember being at J&J and Alex Gorsky at the time was the CEO. And like, we all knew he had a Peloton and his Peloton was his thing. Right. But like, to know that he had that like, yeah, he had the tools and he was doing the work. It helps us realize, oh, he's got structure. Maybe, you know, maybe that's something I'm missing.
And taking the time, I remember I had a CEO also that we knew that he was at the gym, you know, at 5 a.m. or whatever time. And I thought, wow, he's making the time. Yes, he's the CEO and he has all this responsibility, but even he's making the time to take care of himself. I love that perspective. What about, and you would think this would be even easier in a smaller organization, but I think sometimes, and I've had clients that are afraid to show, because it's such a small team, they feel like they have to hold this line or keep the mask on, you know, to keep them all kind of along this, you know, just to keep them going in the positive direction. So any guidance for smaller businesses, business leaders? Yeah.
One of my clients comes to mind. They're a nonprofit and they're smaller, and their executive team, I had the privilege of resilience coaching. And I think, you know, you're right. There is, because they're closer to their people and it's smaller, they do. I mean, from my experience, want to keep this perspective on them up. But I had one gentleman who like started to do some of the practices that I recommend, and he started sharing them with his team. And, you know, just to say, hey, you know, so I started this routine, or I started doing this, or I started to be extra conscientious of my sleep or whatever, and made a huge difference for his people. Like, he was like, Michelle, everything you're telling me, I'm telling them. They're getting the benefits of our coaching. And I'm like, that's great. But then he shows up as much more human, you know,
yes,
relatable. And what happens there? Well, you build trust, you build more connection. You know, it's not always bad to be vulnerable. You know, it can actually serve your rapport with your people.
Yes. So what about creating and leading resilient teams? Mm-hmm. Any tips that you have there?
Yeah. So it does start in the situation I just shared. It does start by modeling. I always said this, like, even before I was doing resilience work, I was teaching leaders how to cultivate more empathy and compassion in the workplace for just the sheer number of people who may have been struggling post-COVID. And I always said that, like, it takes something for us to model for other people, right? So, but that's truly what people need to see, right? So you can tell them all day long, have work-life balance, have work-life balance. I've had people come to me and go, I'm so sick of my boss telling me I needed more work-life balance when I don't even know what that looks like.
Right.
So when you show them what it could look like, you know, I'm not checking email from the time I get home until tomorrow morning, because that is my hard line in the sand that I'm going to be with my kids. Right. Yeah. Like modeling it is so powerful. Again, gives permission to people to actually be able to do the same thing and create those boundaries so they come back refreshed.
Yes. Yeah. So important. And I think sometimes, again, especially with the smaller businesses and nonprofits, I think even as well, having, because you wear so many hats and you're pulled in so many different directions, having, being able to set those boundaries. So what, when you are working with leaders or teams in building resilience, what are some, can you share some of the tips that you give them for that?
Yeah. You know, it's great. I'm building right now. I'm in the process of building and publishing an ebook about all the things I've learned, because after the many, many years, and it's like 4,000 hours of one-on-one coaching, I have data.
Yeah.
I'm a big data girl. So awesome. I have a lot of data about like what worked, what moved the needle, right? People coming to me on the verge of burnout, like what worked, like what were the things that actually worked? So those are the nuggets I'm going to put in this ebook. But you know, some of the most common things that were relatively easy to change, but made a huge difference, were things like being completely responsible and rigid about sleep, right? Mm. Like being like, it's a non-negotiable. I have a consistent sleep pattern. I mean, like Gary Brecka talks about this stuff. This is the only opportunity your body fully has to recharge, rejuvenate, and give yourself a shot at handling stress the next day. So like sleep is critical. Falling into your day, that was one of the biggest things that I learned, was the average person wakes up, hits snooze, jumps out of bed, races around in the morning, grabs a cup of coffee, gets in the car, hits stress with traffic, right? And then like, boom, they're like, now they're going into the office and they've already had like high cortisol morning.
Yes.
So it's not falling into your morning. It's thinking about, how can I intentionally set my day? How do I give myself even 15 minutes to just sit in the silence and maybe clear my head and set an intention for the day and sip my cup of coffee, do something for me before mm-hmm. I race into my day? So like, that's a big one. Like, I'm always asking people, how do you start your day? It's a domino effect to how the day will unfold. So that's a big one too. So those are like two of the ones that are the most common.
Okay. So sleep, and then really just, how do you ease into your day? How do you start your day?
How are you starting your day? For sure.
That's great. Great. I've been reading some of the statistics on burnout, and I know that mental well-being, we saw a huge decrease during the times of COVID, and I think it's on the upswing, like we're coming out of a bit of that funk. But what have you seen, you know, during COVID to now? Have you seen a change, or is it still pretty consistently bad?
Yeah, everybody had their own experience. You know, I think like the first thing I always tell a client is like, you know, yeah, we may have all been in the same experience of COVID. Like we may have been in the same body of water, but all of us were in very different boats. You know, mm-hmm. like we had pre-existing experiences with isolation. Maybe we had pre-existing experiences with loss. So our experience of COVID is very unique to us. So like the first thing I do is give people permission to realize that like your experience was very unique to you. And I think a lot of people, as they have come out of COVID, maybe addressed some of the impact that had on them, whether it was a lot of loss in their life or loss of financial stability or loss of a job or whatever. And they kind of weathered it in their own way, right? So, I mean, I think it's a mix. I think some people maybe never dealt with it, and some people are, you know, just starting to deal with it, the impact it had. And then there are others who have always just been sort of working through that, you know? So people when I'm meeting them are kind of, you know, they're more focused on how do I keep the balance in my life now? Now that I, you know, I have a good job, I have these responsibilities, like, how do I do this? You know, and yes, you know, COVID impacted me, but like right now, how do I get myself out of this, Michelle? How do I, if I feel like I'm slipping toward burnout, how do I get out of it? How do I take care of myself?
Yeah. And I just dislike bringing up COVID because I want to even move past it. Like, okay, that was then, this is now, like, it's a fresh slate. You know, how can we live, you know, to the best of our ability right now? Mm-hmm. And so what's the one piece of advice you'd give the average person right now?
Right. I think my advice is stop waiting for your external circumstances to change in order to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
I see this all the time. You know, when Susie goes off to college, when I get this person to help me at work, when, you know, we get through this, then I'll take care of myself. And like, my invitation to you is you have to put the oxygen mask on yourself, because at the end of the day, of course, you want to perform the best of your ability on your job, and that's important. But if you're not taking care of yourself, the person that's going to get the short end of the stick are the people that you love. And that's your family, that's your children, that's your partner. So get the impact of you not putting the oxygen mask on yourself and waiting for the perfect conditions to make yourself a priority. Make yourself a priority now. Make yourself a priority every day. Do something to fill your cup and your bucket, so you get to show up the best version of yourself.
That's great advice. I love that. Well, this has been phenomenal, and I really just appreciate what you're doing. Thank you for allowing us to share this wisdom on the Culture Coach podcast. And thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Wendy.
What a great conversation. Okay, here are my takeaways. Number one, why are we not talking about burnout before it happens? Why are we not talking about the preservation of our well-being? Number two, boost your resilience and become aware of where you have agency. Number three, we need more leaders to go first. When a senior leader is courageous enough to tell their own story, it helps others. There's a silent permission that's given when we hear our leaders go first and share their stories that make them more human. Number four, leaders can create a space that feels safe to speak up about their challenges. Be aware of the barriers of care in your own organization. Is there a barrier that prevents them from getting care? Number five, highlighting your own practices for well-being can show others the benefits of structure in your life that can create well-being. Number six, model the way for your teams. Cultivate more empathy and compassion in the workplace. It takes something for us to model for other people. Show them what work-life balance looks like. Set boundaries. It gives permission for your people to do the same. Number seven, be completely responsible and rigid about sleep. It is the only opportunity your body has to rejuvenate and give it a fighting chance against stress the next day. Number eight, how do you fall into your day? Don't start with the cortisol-inducing activities. Give yourself even just 15 minutes to sip your coffee and do something for yourself to start your day off right. Number nine, stop waiting for your external circumstances to change in order to take care of yourself. Make time right now. You have to put the oxygen mask on yourself first. That's it. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will have more next week. See you then.